Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the next group of instruction. This is a book that was translated by Srila Prabhupada in 2 weeks in Mayapur. On my way over to India this year, I stopped in Bangkok. And there I met one of Srila Prabhupada's first disciples who joined the movement in 1967. His name is Rishikeshananda. And for some time, he lived in India. He left America in 1967, I think, and went to India. There he was living with a Gaudiya Math for some time. And then he came back to our society around 1970, something around, or maybe a little later. And at that time he was in Mayapur with Srila Prabhupada, and he suggested to Srila Prabhupada about translating the Nectar of Instruction. So Prabhupada immediately began to translate the Nectar of Instruction. And then, first he was simply dictating it to the devotees to write down, but they couldn't follow it, exactly what Prabhupada was saying. So then they got him a dictaphone. And he transcribed it into a dictaphone. Prabhupada mentions that this Nectar of Instruction is one of the most important books in our society for our movement. He wanted this especially to be printed in large quantities and delivered to people in general. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had written 8 slokas explaining Krishna consciousness in a nutshell, so Rupa Goswami has also explained Krishna consciousness in 11 different texts. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, or in the preface, that this Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant to create Goswamis. And a Goswami means one who can utilize all his senses in the service of Krishna. There are 6 senses, which includes the mind. And if these are engaged in Krishna's service, then he's called a Goswami. And if one is not engaging his senses in Krishna's service, then he's called Godas, or the servant of the senses. In the first text, Rupa Goswami will explain the importance of utilizing one's senses in the service of Krishna. So we'll read the first text. How many devotees have books there? Vacho. Or vacha. Vegam. Manasa, Krodha, Vegam, Jiva, Vegam, Udara, Upasta, Vegam, Etan, Vegan, Ya, Vishaheta, Vira, Sarvam, Api, Mam, Prativim, Sa, Sushat. So if you just remember one word, then you've learned half the verse. So it shouldn't be too hard, difficult to remember this verse. Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. Jiva Vegam, Udra Pasta Vegam. Etan vegam yo vishaheta dira. Sarvam apimam prithivim sashishat. Vacha vegam manasakrodha vegam. Jiva vegam udrapasta vegam. Etan vegam yo vishaheta dira. Sarvam apimam prativim sashishat. Sarvam apimam like to? Anyone like to chant it? Vashisha Vacha, a speech. Vegam, urge. Manasa, of the mind. Krodha, of anger. Vegam, urge. Jiva, of the tongue. Vegam, urge. Udara upasta, of the belly and genitals. Vegam, urge. Etan, vegan. Anyone know what it means? You've guessed it. Urges. Ya, whoever. Vishaheta, can tolerate. Dira, sober. Sarvam, all. Api, certainly. Imam, this. Prativim, world. Sa, that personality. Shishat, can make disciples. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. The purport Prabhupada points out that in the 6.1, the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6.1, text number 9-10, that Parikshit Maharaj, he placed a number of intelligent questions before Shukadeva Goswami. The end of the fifth canto, Shukadeva Goswami described different hells that people have to visit. And being a Vaishnava and being compassionate upon the suffering people in general, because a Vaishnava is known as Paradukha Dukhi, one is unhappy to see others unhappy. So Parikshit Maharaj asked, what is the remedy for the suffering of people? And he asked the question, why do people undergo atonement, which is known as prayaschitta, if at the end of the atonement they don't actually get any permanent benefit? In other words, this is known as the elephant bath. Hati, what's that? That's the elephant offense. I don't know. Snana. Hasti snana. That the elephant, it goes into the river or the lake and bathes very nicely. But as soon as bathing is finished, he comes back onto the land and then starts throwing dirt all over his body. So what is the value of such bathing? Similarly, if a person commits sinful activities and then atones for those activities, which is known as prayaschitta, but then again commits the same sinful activities again, what is the value of such atonement? And Prabhupada explains that there are different classes of persons. The most intelligent person is one who hears, and simply by hearing he learns. Learning means that as soon as he hears, he agrees to act on that instruction. The next class of persons with second class intelligence, they hear, but they can't grasp exactly what's being said. Therefore, they have to learn by experience. And the third class, which are known as the rascals, they hear, they don't quite hear, and they experience, but they don't even accept their experience. They just go on whimsically acting in the material world. And Prabhupada gives the example that one can hear from the authorities that if you steal, that is not good, and yet if you're arrested, you'll be punished. So an intelligent person, he does not steal, and therefore he's not arrested and punished. But a second-class person, even after hearing that stealing is not desirable, that one will be arrested and punished, still he steals, and he's arrested and punished, but he atones, and he doesn't do it again. But a rascal is one who hears to steal is not very good, he'll be arrested and punished, and still he does it, and he's arrested and punished, but even after being arrested and punished, he goes and steals again. So similarly, if one performs atonement, but he doesn't actually give up the desire to commit sinful activities, then what is the value of such atonement? And Prabhupada says that there's an offense, namna bala hi papa buddhi, committing sins on the strength of chanting. Prabhupada would sometimes say that this is the worst of all the offenses. One place Prabhupada said that one may be excused by committing sin on the strength of chanting from the sin, but the reaction for the offense is greater than the sin. Similarly, many Christians or other religions, they go to church and they pray to God to excuse their sins on Sunday, and then on Monday they start their sinful activities again. So, what is the value of such confession or atonement? Therefore, sinful activity cannot actually be counteracted by pious activity, but the solution is to come to knowledge, to real knowledge. If one is on the platform of real knowledge, knowledge does not mean simply theoretical book knowledge, but it means practical experience, practical awareness, then one will naturally give up such undesirable activities because one will experience a higher taste. Or as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinam rasa varjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. When one can see or experience a higher taste, then naturally he gives up the other types of experience. Although one who by artificial means may try to stop sinful activities, but because he still has the taste for sinful activities, he can't give it up. And what is the process of coming to real knowledge? As it is said in the sixth canto also, that tapasya brahmacharyena samena cha demena cha nimena tyagena tyagena satya sochabhyam nimena niyamena va. So there are different types of activities by which one can come to knowledge or higher consciousness, such as performing austerity, tapasya, remaining celibate, brahmacharya, tapasya, brahmacharya, controlling the mind, dhamma and sama, controlling the senses, and remaining clean, sochabhyam, tyagena, becoming detached, following the regulations and avoiding sinful activities. By such activities, one can gradually come to the platform of real knowledge or real consciousness, higher consciousness. But if one follows the rules and regulations, and according to the Bhakti Yoga system, very easily and quickly one can come to the highest platform of consciousness without having to undergo severe austerities. But one has to follow regular principles. Prabhupada points out there are four main regular principles. No eating meat, fish, or eggs. No taking intoxication. No gambling. No illicit sex or unnecessary sexual activity. So this is called controlling the senses. So Rupa Goswami, he suggests first vacha vegam. One has to control the sense of speaking. This is generally a very hard sense to speak, to control. As soon as we have an opportunity, our tongue wants to vibrate. especially during prasadam. Suddenly the tongue gets a little energy from the prasadam and immediately starts to vibrate. So Prabhupada says that this tongue, when it's not controlled, when it vibrates, what's known as prajalpa or gramya kata, then by such vibration, it is simply inviting the black snake of time to come and eat one up. In other words, as soon as one starts to vibrate, some mundane sound vibration, the result will be that the first person who will hear it is oneself. And by hearing such mundane sound vibration, is assured that one, because everyone is attracted to their voice, their own voice. As soon as one hears his own voice, he falls in love with it. He takes it very seriously. They say that if you want to make a movie, then what you should, or anything, if you want to convince people, people are convinced if they hear animals speaking. Just like if you have a cartoon and you have some animals speaking, then people actually have faith in whatever the animal says. Animals and puppets. If a puppet says something, people think it must be true. Or if an animal says it in a cartoon, then people like Mickey Mouse, or they think Mickey Mouse wouldn't lie. He used to have a cartoon though, it was called Mickey Rat. In any case, people are convinced when they hear their own voice speaking and they become absorbed in it. Therefore, if one is speaking nonsense, then naturally one will also have to hear that nonsense. Similarly, if one speaks Krishna Katha, then one will naturally become absorbed in hearing about Krishna. So mona, or silence, which is recommended by some, namely the impersonalists, for the devotees, silence means to only be engaged in Krishna Katha. In the Bhagavad Gita it said, anuvegam karam vakyam satyam hitam satyam anuvegam karam vakyam satyam hitam chuchoyat swariyaya byasanam chaiva vangmana tap uchete. That austerity of speech consists in saying things that are truthful. Anavegam varam karam vakyam satya priya hitam chaya. So anuvegam, here again we have the word vega, anuvega, not agitating, karam vakyam, to say words which don't agitate others. And satya means truthful, priyam which means pleasing, hitam beneficial, svariya ya vyasanam chaiva, and which are confirmed by authorities, especially the scriptures. So such speaking will certainly elevate one who speaks and be beneficial to others. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, also Parikshit Maharaj, his first question to Shukadeva Goswami was, what is the duty of a person who is about to die? And when Shukadeva Goswami heard this, immediately he responded, Shrotavyadini Rajendra Srinam Shanti Sahasra Shaha Apashitam Atmatadvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. Actually, what is the other verse? That your question is glorious because it is the prime duty of everyone to understand this subject matter. And it is beneficial, therefore, for everyone. For the person who asks the question, for the person who answers the question, and for one who hears the answer to such a question. So he said, Shishuku vacha varyam eva te prashna krito lokita ripaha atmavan tamasa punsang shotivyadishu yat paraha. That this question is glorious. In other words, ask questions which will bring us to the real solutions of life so that we don't have to take another material body. We can go back to the spiritual world and live eternally. Such questions are beneficial to everyone. So rather than wasting our time in the temporary activities of this material world, glorifying them, sometimes, one time one devotee was talking about Maya, and he was glorifying Maya, how strong Maya is, how, you know, Maya is keeping everyone captive. Prabhupada said that don't spend your time glorifying Maya so much, better to glorify Krishna. Sometimes the devotees say, I'm the most fallen, I'm so fallen. So when it's spending, just like sometimes devotees write offerings, Vyas Puja offerings, I'm the lowest of the low, I can't control my mind, I don't know how I can get any merits. They go on and on and on. So, such glorification is nice to some extent, but better to say how nice Krishna is than how rotten and fallen one is. There is one person in Los Angeles, when Prabhupada was there at the beginning of 1969, and he used to walk up and down the street shout with placards on his front of his body and the back of his body. And he was shouting, you're all going to hell, you're all going to hell. You're going to burn in hell, you're going to burn in hell. So the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, where will this person go when he leaves his body? And Prabhupada said, he'll go to hell, of course. Because all day long, he's simply shouting out about hell. So naturally when he dies, he'll think of hell and go there. Therefore, the conclusion is that one should utilize his speaking power to glorify Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. And this way, one will certainly be benefited. So this is known as Krishna Katha. And the restlessness or fickleness of the mind is possible when one can fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. It is said, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Vardhanet. That Maharaj Ambarish, he first of all fixed his mind upon the lotus feet of Krishna. And it is said, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andakar Yahum Krishna Tahum Nahi Mayara Adhikar. That Krishna is compared to the sun and Maya is compared to darkness. So wherever there's Krishna, there can't be any question of darkness. Similarly, wherever Krishna isn't, Maya must be there. Therefore, how to absorb the mind in thinking of Krishna? The stage is called asakti. There are different stages of devotional service. One is called asakti. And at the stage of asakti, even if the mind temporarily deviates from thinking of Krishna, immediately it withdraws back into thinking of Krishna. Just like for the ordinary person, or even the ordinary devotee, once in a while the mind wanders and thinks of Krishna. But as soon as by chance the mind happens to think of Krishna, immediately the mind will withdraw itself back into thinking of Maya again. It was a mistake. Don't do it again. But at the same time of the state of asakti, one was always thinking of Krishna, specifically his pastimes. Krishna begins the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita by talking about the state of asakti. He says, Maya asakta manakparata yogam yunjan manashaya asam shayam samagramam ita gyasasi tats trinu. Now hear from me, O son of Kunti, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness to me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So this state of asakti comes when one's natural affection for Krishna is manifested. In other words, trying to think of Krishna artificially will not be possible. One may be able to do it, but that one will not be able to actually think of Krishna in that way. Especially Krishna's pastimes. It only is possible when one develops some affection for Krishna. And that affection is possible only when one engages in Krishna's devotional service and tries to please Krishna. And as one tries to please Krishna, Krishna reciprocates, and then one can understand by experience how nice Krishna is. Only when one finds out how nice Krishna is, can it possible to become attached to Krishna in such a way as to always think of him. Now, at the beginning of devotional service, when we generally don't know Krishna very well, we think he's, you know, God, and our conception of God, the person who's beating us, torturing us in the material world, who might be able to free us from our miseries and give us a special bonus on his birthday or something. So we generally think of God as the order supplier. We think of God as the controller. We think of God in so many different ways. But we never, when we think of him as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, we think, oh, this is too much. How can God be a cowherd boy in Vrindavan? It spoils my conception that he's my order supplier, or he's the big controller. But when we realize how sweet Krishna is, how wonderful his pastimes are, and his affectionate dealings with his devotees, then naturally the mind becomes attached to him. Similarly, anger can be controlled if it's used in Krishna's service. We shouldn't think that using Krishna's service means that if a devotee gets angry, or if a devotee bothers me, since I'm an advanced devotee myself, then if I become angry at that devotee, I'm actually blessing him. So this type of anger is not necessarily, anger when it's directed towards the devotees is not devotional service. But when it's directed against the non-devotees, or those who are inimical towards Krishna, then such use of anger is appropriate. Of course, if you go out in book distribution and you ask someone for a donation and they say, get a job, and you think, wow, this is certainly a demon, I should become angry. That is not necessarily an appropriate use of anger either, especially if you have to spend the day of Sankirtan in jail somewhere, cooling off. Instead, one should, generally anger should be controlled, but only when there is a question of appropriately utilizing it in Krishna's service. In the Bhagavad Gita it is also said, saknoti haiva yaksho dum praksharira vimokshanat kama krodo vivan vegan sa yukta sa sukhinara. So here Krishna says that before giving up the present body, shaknoti haiva yaksho dum praksharira vimokshanat, that if one is able to check the forces, here the word vegam is used again, of desire and anger, then he is liberated. I think that's the translation. Shaknoti haiva yaksho dum praksharira vimokshana kama krodo bhavan vegan sayukta sasukinara. And he is happy in this world. Before giving up his present body, one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So Krishna consciousness is not some utopian philosophy about some future liberation in some utopian place somewhere. But it is a practical philosophy teaching one how to become free from unnecessary desires and anger by purifying our activities in devotional service. Therefore, one time Prabhupada said that if you have, you're constantly angry, then the best thing to do is to think of Lord Nrisimhadev. Because no matter how angry we can get, no one can compare it to Lord Nrisimhadev. So he's the anger acharya. So if one thinks of Lord Nrisimhadev, then certainly his anger will cool down. Similarly, once Prabhupada said that if one is overwhelmed by sex desire, he should think of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. That was 1968, though. Later he refined it, because at that time probably the devotees didn't know so much about the gopis. So, in any case, that's a tricky explanation, or at least tricky suggestion, because if one thinks of Krishna with the gopis, his pastimes, naturally one will, if one thinks of it in the right mood, of course. Not if one thinks that Krishna is an ordinary person, the gopis are ordinary girls. Such thoughts will degrade one. But if one is actually appreciating Krishna and his loving exchanges on the transcendental platform with the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, then he'll become purified. Therefore, the conclusion is, so far, is that one should not stop activities, even anger or desire or the mind, but learn how to utilize these facilities that Krishna has given us in his devotional service. So I think we'll stop there for today. Continue on tomorrow. Are there any questions? Susie has some questions. Everything becomes very silent. All you can hear is people breathing. All right, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, nectar of instruction, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nectar of instruction. We'll be reading from text 1. Vacha vegam anasakrodha vegam jiva vegam udra pasta vegam etan vegam yo vishahe tadira sarvam apimam prativim sashisha. Sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. We've got up to anger. Now the tongue. As far as the urges of the tongue, we all experience that the tongue wants to eat palatable dishes. So as we know, the tongue is known as the most difficult to control. It is said, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Na Braved Grayam Indriyai Sevam Mukhehi Jivado Swayam Eva Spratyada. That no one can realize Krishna with the blunt material senses. But when the senses become purified by devotional service, beginning with the tongue, then one is able to engage in Krishna, one is able to understand Krishna. Prabhupada one time said, it may surprise you, but self-realization begins with the tongue. So we know that the tongue likes to vibrate and to eat palatable dishes, so it's recommended that one should eat Krishna prasadam. But Prabhupada says here, at scheduled times, and one should not eat in restaurants and sweetmeat shops. This is especially applicable to India, where there are sometimes the devotees think that in Vrindavan, everything is offered. Therefore, you can eat anywhere and anything, and it's all offered to Krishna, therefore it's prasadam. One time one devotee, he ate one in a sweetmeat shop, he ate a rascal, and the rascal was cursed. So, inside the rascal was a little bark of a tree, a little part of a tree, and the tree began to grow in his stomach. So it grew into a tree, into his stomach, and he couldn't eat anything. And the doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And then he went to a psychic surgeon in the Philippines, and the psychic surgeon took the tree out. Therefore, it's not recommended to eat in sweetmeat shops and even in Vrindavan. Of course, it may have been a sacred tree that was growing in his stomach. Kalpa Vriksha tree. In any case, it's not recommended. Prasadam is what makes something prasadam, especially, is the consciousness of the eater. That when we're eating prasadam, if we remember Krishna, then it's truly prasadam. And if we don't remember Krishna, or we don't see it in relationship to Krishna, then it's, it can't actually be considered exactly, well, it's prasadam, it's offered to Krishna. But the effect of prasadam varies according to our consciousness. Just like the holy name is Krishna, undoubtedly, but our experience of the holy name depends upon our consciousness when we chant the holy name. Similarly, prasadam, surely prasadam, it's offered to Krishna, but the experience we have depends upon our consciousness. But it says here, if one can stick to only eating Krishna prasadam, naturally the belly and the genitals will be controlled. Or it says here, the urges of the belly and the tongue can be controlled. So in a similar manner, the urges of the genitals, the sex impulse, can be controlled if it's utilized only to produce Krishna-conscious children. And then Prabhupada said, as soon as the children are a little grown up, they're sent to our Gurukul in Dallas, Texas. Hopefully people call up before they send their child to the Gurukul in Dallas, because there may not be any room there. Where they are trained to become fully Krishna-conscious devotees. And then these explanations divided into two different parts. One is called the Anuvriti by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. Also, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur has written his commentary on the nectar of instruction. And one of the devotees, Pundarik Puru in Vrindavan, he's translating that now, or is having someone translate it. So here it says that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is divided in the body into three different parts. The urge to speak, the urge and demands of the mind, and the demands of the body. So when the living entity engages all these different urges in Krishna's service, then his life is auspicious. And when he engages it in sense gratification, then his life is very inauspicious. So this is one who engages or controls the urges is called the tapasya. And by such tapasya, one can overcome the victimization by the illusory energy of Krishna. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada has explained that the urge to speak means the useless talk of the Mayavadis or the Jnanis, the impersonalists, or the karmis engaged in fruitive activities. They write volumes of nonsensical literatures. Just as we have our marathon, we try to distribute as many books as possible. Unfortunately, the karmis, they also have their marathon. And they distribute many more books than we do. Even without going into the street, they have it so much together in their distribution of their literature that people actually flock to the bookstores and buy books. Some people buy books they don't even know how to read, just for the prestige of having the books on the bookshelf. In any case, these karmis sell millions and millions of books all about sense gratification and mental speculation. So this is called Yadvat viparaya yadvichas chitra padam hayarisho jagat pravritam parigriha karichish tadvayasam kirtu ushanti manasa niyatra hangsa niramantu shikshaya. That those words which do not describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose glory is going to alone purify the entire universe, is said to be like places of pilgrimage for the crows, the all-perfect persons who are residents of the transcendental abode. They cannot take any pleasure there. And then, tadvagvi sargo janatagla viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abhadavatyapi namanyanantasya shankitaniyat shinvanti gayanti grinanti sarava. Shinvanti gayanti grinanti sarava. On the other hand, that literature, which is full of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is of a different creation, meant to bring about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, although they may be imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. That is known as sattva. In other words, there are many, many literatures, and they're all designated for the crows. They're full of the refuge of sense gratification. And there is the new crows and the old crows. Often we find, for instance, when someone comes to the Western world, especially immigrants, they become very enthusiastic for sense gratification. The old crows, the people who live there, they're burnt out. They're not so enthusiastic. But the new crows, they flock to enjoy the new type of sense gratification. Therefore, sometimes we find that devotees also, after having a break from sense gratification, when they get a little taste for sense gratification again, they become like the new crows. They think that, let me enjoy material life again. Try it one more time. But actually, the old crows and the new crows, they can't really derive very much pleasure from the garbage. But the swans or the ducks, they take pleasure in the lotus ponds of the transcendental narrations of the Personality of Godhead, which are full of the chirpings of the chakora birds and the chakravakra birds and the nice clear lakes full of the transcendental vibrations about Krishna's name, form, transcendental pastimes. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada says that there are two different types of agitations in the mind, better known as lust and anger. Generally speaking, in the material world, everyone is trying to enjoy the material energy, and when it becomes impossible to do so, they become angry. Therefore, we find in society, some people are lusty and some people are angry. And when people are lusty, they think they're enjoying, and when they're angry, they think they're suffering. But either lust or anger, both people are suffering. Therefore, the Mayavadis were angry at the material world, and the Gyanis were angry at the material world, or the Karmis were lusty after enjoying the material world. Actually, there's not that much difference. Similarly, the demands of the body can be divided into the tongue, belly, and genitals. Prabhupada said they're situated in a straight line. In other words, if one tries to gratify the tongue, certainly the belly will become agitated. And if the belly becomes agitated, certainly the genitals will become agitated. And therefore, it will become very difficult to control the senses. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has written one song, which we generally sing as quickly as we can before we take prasana. Sharira avidya ja. Therefore, we find in society, some people are lusty and some people are angry. And when people are lusty, they think they're enjoying. And when they're angry, they think they're suffering. But either lust or anger, both people are suffering. Therefore, the Mayavadis were angry at the material world, and the Jnanis were angry at the material world, or the Karmis were lusty after enjoying the material world. Actually, there's not that much difference. Similarly, the demands of the body can be divided into the tongue, belly, and genitals. Prabhupada said they're situated in a straight line. In other words, if one tries to gratify the tongue, certainly the belly will become agitated. And if the belly becomes agitated, certainly the genitals will become agitated. And therefore, it will become very difficult to control the senses. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written one song, which we generally sing as quickly as we can before we take prasadam. Sharira avidya jal jatendriya taikal jive thali visaya sagare taramadai jivayati lobamaya sidurmati take jeta kantina samsare krishna badadaya moy kori vare jivajoy Swapasharana Dilavai, Sanamrita Kao, Radha Krishna Gunagao, Premadaka Chaitanyanitai. O Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or another, we fall into an ocean of material sense enjoyment. And of all the senses, the tongue is most voracious and uncontrollable. It is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world. But you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent us this nice prasadam to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasadam to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordships, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and love call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. And then Prabhupada says that there are six kinds of tastes, known as madhurya, which is sweet, and sour is kratu. Then there is salty, which is lavana. Then there's pungent, tikta. And bitter, I forget what bitter is. And astringent. So there are six tastes: sweet, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, bitter. If one is agitated by any one of them, he becomes controlled by the urges of the tongue. Prabhupada lists all different types of foods, such as meat and fish and eggs, crabs, so many other things, eaten in the form of dead bodies, produced by semen and blood, and eaten in the form of dead bodies. Sounds exciting. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada relates that on his tour of Burma, he related one time, he found that the people in the village there, they gather all the dead entities, whatever died in the village, and they put it into a pot, and then they put the pot on the top of the roof and let the sun cook it. And then, on special occasions, they pour the mixture, whatever it was, it all kind of like merged, they pour it on their rice in it for the feast. In other words, different people have different types of tastes. Of course, we may think that's barbaric, but if you go to a supermarket, I remember one time I was distributing books, so I stopped. Actually, we were staying at this place. We were doing traveling Sankirtan, so we stayed at this kind of we had a car. I guess it was kind of a motel. And I saw, it was a cheap hotel, that they had, that this lady had a restaurant, and in the restaurant she's selling different things. And one of the things she was selling was bottled pig's feet. They sell pig's feet. Is that, I'm sure they do that here too. Just to give you an idea of all the different varieties of food that people have. Also, but this sounds very terrible to us, but if you go to a supermarket in America, you can buy chocolate-covered ants. They have that. That's not, they have also chocolate-covered caterpillars. People eat caterpillars. And in Korea, I was told on the street, they have boxes, just like they sell pretzels some places. So there they sell cockroaches. That you can pick out your cockroach in the box. People, that's a big delicacy. So one man's food is another man's poison. If they, as Prabhupada writes, that for us, halva and sweet rice is a great delicacy. But in some cultures, if they see halva and sweet rice, they become very nauseous. They become disgusted. But if they see a nice fresh cockroach, they become... So different modes of nature are attracted to different types of food. So Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised that we also avoid eating very palatable prasadam. And he, from Antilila, it's quoted, Shivara layase ye iti uti daya shisnodara parayana krishna nahipaya. That person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate and is always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to obtain Krishna. And it's stated here that those who suffer from diseases of the stomach must be unable to control the urges of the belly, at least according to this analysis. So this over-collecting, as we'll find out later, or this wanting to eat more than required, also leads to prayasas, or unnecessary endeavor. The main reason why people work is to get food. Although people don't realize that, they think that there are so many other necessities, but the only real necessity in the material world is food and a little bit of shelter. And even one can sometimes live without shelter. Of course, in the Western world where it's cold, that's not possible generally. But food is the main source of the main stable of maintenance. Therefore, if one can eat properly, and actually all his, if one can avoid overeating, he can avoid over-endeavor, and therefore he can spend his extra time in self-realization. And then there is the quote by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how one should avoid illicit sex and everything connected with unnecessary sense gratification. And the conclusion is that one who utilizes his senses in Krishna's service, he's known as a Goswami, and one who is addicted to sense gratification, he's known as Godas. And Prahlad Maharaj said, Matirna Krishna Paratakshatova Mito Vipadyeta Griha Vratanam Adantago Virvishitam Tamizram Punak Punas Charvita Charvananam. For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, nor by instruction from others, or by joint conferences. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, lest they madly chew engage in what is called chewing the truth. So we'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Well, the most important reason is that if one takes it in the consciousness of service to the devotees, in appreciation to the devotees. If one has faith that this is connected to Krishna, then if one takes him that way, then he'll certainly become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. If one thinks that these devotees are intimately connected to Krishna, then naturally when he eats that food, he'll also think of Krishna very intimately, and therefore he'll make a lot of advancement in being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. The example of such a devotee was Kalidas. Kalidas had faith in three different types of substances: the water that washed the devotee's feet, the dust from the feet of the devotees, and the remnants of their prasadam. So because he had faith in these items, therefore even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him special mercy. Anything else? Yes. Do you like it when you go on a strict diet? Yes. The Prabhupada was a Paramahansa also. Therefore, although he suffered from different bodily inconveniences, he wasn't affected by it. We can see it in two ways. One is that Prabhupada set an example that we should have faith in prasadam. And the other is that he was an elderly man, and in any case, he was going to leave his body. Therefore, he didn't take this idea of becoming healthy as something very significant. There's so many ways of looking at it. But generally for us, we know if we get sick, we lose our Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we should generally avoid such things. Not that Prabhupada wasn't on a diet, so I could just eat, 5 or 10 sweet balls a day. And any time someone criticizes me for it, I say, well, Prabhupada didn't follow a diet. So we generally don't want to be so strict that we count every single grain that we eat. On the other hand, we don't want to be, oblivious to the fact that we do have a material body. Prabhupada also, although he didn't follow, when he ate, it wasn't that he just ate whimsically also. The diets they wanted to give him were, from more or less karmis, give him diets. And Prabhupada didn't necessarily agree with them. No salt, no this, no that. But Prabhupada didn't, he just took prasadam. But Prabhupada never really ate, for instance, especially he generally ate very simply. And he generally didn't eat very much. He had dal, rice, and chapatis, and some sabji. That was his general diet. So it wasn't that when he wasn't following a diet, he was having very elaborate preparations. Anything else? Yes. Is that right? I guess that must be true. Yeah, he definitely set an example. Especially if there was no need to eat it. I mean, Prabhupada was sometimes like when he was traveling in India, he'd take what was available. He even said one time that they were traveling, they stopped at a train station, he told them to get some kachoris that were fried in the oil on the train station. So anyone who's ever seen the oil they fry in it, that they use to fry these things in the train station, I mean, it's probably, it's, you know, it was inherited from the person's grandmother. Same oil his grandmother used. But still Prabhupada had them go out and get some kachoris. He said, if you eat them hot, you can digest them. So depend on circumstances. But just for sense gratification to get things from, you know, made by karmis. Also the karmis, generally at least the people who cook things at a train station, they've been doing it, you know, for their whole life. Since they're like 4 years old and, you know, frying things on the train station. So they're generally quite good at it. But these karmis, you never know what's, you know, they're so unclean. You never know what's in something made by a karma. They don't wash their hands after they use the toilet. They never, you know. And then you're going to eat their food. Yeah.
You might be young for some months. And you said that it depends on the faith when you take an enemy side of shaman. It's still shaman.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, if the prasadam is nicely prepared, then the people become attracted. But we don't want to leave people on the level of just eating prasadam. Think that this person has been saved because he's eating prasadam. Because, like, sometimes in our temples, we have people who only come for the Sunday feast. So it takes them a long time. Without elevating to the platform of knowledge, people aren't really making any spiritual advancement, although they get some material benefit from eating something in relation to Krishna. But there's no spiritual advancement. But this generally it's a weapon because it was devised to bring people to the temple so they can get the association of devotees and hear about Krishna consciousness. We've heard, of course, the old story how one time one man was walking in the forest and he had just eaten some prasadam, but then a lion came and ate him. And someone shot the lion, and the man and the lion both went back to Godhead because the lion had eaten someone who had eaten prasadam. So these are meant to encourage us to eat prasadam. Or to encourage lions to eat. Be more discriminating who they eat. But we know generally prasadam has this effect according to our consciousness. I mean, it's just practical. If you gobble down prasadam as if it was ordinary food, there's only a very limited effect. But if it helps one remember Krishna, then it's called Krishna consciousness. Then it bestows a spiritual effect.
Yeah. Also, you read my life that if karma takes a man to the spiritual master, if the spiritual master can some depth, is that true?
I mean, everything depends on consciousness. You know, if someone depends on the consciousness. If a devotee, if someone takes the reins to the devotee and the devotee's thinking, I'm so elevated, I'm saving everyone, then certainly he's going to have a bad effect. I mean, generally, a devotee doesn't distribute his remnants to non-devotees. Because it's a question of humility. the value of distributing remnants to a non-devotee? They have no idea what it means. Yeah, well they can't, because they can't understand what's going on. That's the main thing. Right. They'd rather throw it all, they throw it all out. Also, we shouldn't, at the beginning I remember, they didn't want to waste any food. So after the Sunday feast, the devotees would go around, whatever they could find, they'd eat. Whether it was thrown on the floor or whatever. And they figured this is special mercy. But it's not a good... Prabhupada said, of course it depends on faith. In the beginning, when the devotees are a little crazy, then they have a lot of faith. I remember watching a devotee lick up sweet rice from the floor. What was that? Bow down and lick that up. You can imagine the visitors, you know, watching. Topmost spotlight. Anyhow, these things are... Prabhupada is a question of faith, but generally it's not advised. Because to be able to remember Krishna under such circumstances is really putting one to the test. To see the whole thing in relation to Krishna. I remember the first Prabhupada asked me to go down to open a temple. So Rupanuga, my temple president, sent me to Miami at that time. So at first in Miami, I arrived there and there was no temple. So I had no idea where to go. Then I found out that the devotees were in a bookstore. So I went to this bookstore, and they were all leaving the next day, except for one of them, Gargamuni and his servant, two of them. They had no permanent place to stay, so we were living on the outside in our sleeping bags in a park, or wherever we could. And in the morning, we'd get up and we'd make chapatis. And his assistant, and myself, we'd make chapatis. Gargamuni would make apple chutney. And then we'd have a kirtan, and all these hippies would come around, and we'd distribute. And at the end of distributing all the prasadam, we got to eat. Each one of us got to eat two chapatis and a little chutney. That was our whole meal for the day. So the only thing to do is to go around looking for the remnants that the hippies left. Basically, just to survive. So that went on for a couple of weeks. And then they sent me to another temple. I had a hitchhike to around 2,500 miles to another place. And when I finally arrived there, because they didn't give me any food, I didn't get anything to eat on the way except for two date balls, which I ate before I left, and some bananas that some people gave me on the way. So then I remember when I arrived there, I met up with Vishnu John and his assistant. And they handed me a plate with six chapatis. I thought this is the meal for everyone. We had to divide it up between the three of us, and this was our meal for the whole day. And then he said, you can eat all six. And I said, wow, that's far out. So there are different circumstances. One sees things differently under different... Sometimes getting half a chapati... I remember it, as far as prasadam pastimes, Vishnu John Maharaj, he had this idea. He's quite a romantic personality. He had this idea that to save money on the Sunday feast plates, we make big chapatis and we put little bits of the Sunday feast, of the different preparations in the chapati, and roll it up and then serve out the chapati. So that our Sunday feast used to be at a park because we didn't have a temple. So we'd go out and we'd make these huge chapatis and put a little bit of the different preparations and roll them out and then pass them out. This is our Sunday feast. People actually liked it. It was actually, it's quite unusual. But especially when the preparations kind of like merge into each other. But at all the prasadam we had, we always served out, so I guess it was somewhat popular. Anything else? Hand appears out of the sky and strangles you. Well, the whole idea of observing codicy is to increase one's remembrance of Krishna. So all these strict rules and regulations are not so important, but there's no reason not to follow it. As far as knowing exactly when to do it, why it's done is because there are different titis. And Ekadasi ends at a certain time, and then the next titi begins. And the next titi is supposed to break the fast. So during that juncture, the titis, you're supposed to break the fast. Apparently, it's Ekadasi, the next day, is considered during sunrise. So when the sun's in that particular, during that particular constellation, consider the next day, or during that muhurta, the next day is said to be begun. So during that muhurta, when the next day is beginning, you're supposed to break the fast. Dwadasi means the day after Ekadasi, the 12th day, Dwadasi. Well, there are different explanations. Why? Because the moon has a great influence, for instance, from the Ayurvedic point of view, the moon has a great influence on the consciousness and the mind, and also on the physiology of the body. So during that time, and during the time from that time, for instance, at the new and the full moons, the moon is exerting a lot of influence on the body. So in order to prepare the body for that influence, when it wants to decrease the sense gratification, so the body will not become so disturbed.
It's true that if you don't follow Kadasi properly, that you can get embarrassed. Is this true?
Yeah, you could. Well, what do you think the benefit is? I mean, one time when devotee wrote this book, I'm sure Prabhupada wouldn't have been very much pleased. It suddenly became very popular. It explained about how how people fasted on Ekadasi, knowingly or unknowingly, they became free from a ghost body, or they got a kingdom, they got a wife, or they got something like that. So this type of karmakanda, propaganda, in order to observe Ekadasi, this is not very much appreciated by the devotees. This idea, I miss this Ekadasi, and therefore I won't get my, pet poodle that I was hoping for. Now, that's not the reason why we observe Ekadasi is to principally to give us a better opportunity to remember Krishna. That's all. If one restricts his sense gratification and hears and chants more, then his absorption in Krishna consciousness will increase. That's the benefit. Any other benefit is a waste of time for a devotee. I mean, in your next lifetime, you know, the idea I've been observing Ekadasi strictly, and next lifetime I'll become a king. For a devotee, that's not very desirable to look forward to a next lifetime. So well, you can follow him. He was a person who very strictly followed Ekadasi. Unfortunately, he didn't strictly follow anything else. So you can follow him, find out about, you know, this Ekadasi. You know, I'll get a kingdom. My grandfather is a ghost, so become this and that. So you may become enthusiastic to follow Ekadasi because of that. But nowhere in the book does it mention about, practically mention about becoming Krishna conscious. So devotees make protests. It's not just the left movement. The protest is that it's, what does it have to do with Krishna consciousness? No, I mean to become enthusiastic about receiving so many different material benefits from following the goddess. Nowhere in Prabhupada's books does it mention anything about these things. I remember for around 6 months in our society, it was a big fad to follow Kadasa. That everyone was, many devotees were strictly following. I don't know if it happened here. They fast all day, sometimes chant 64 rounds. They wouldn't sleep at night. And if you didn't do it, you're considered like a demon. And I was thinking after some time, that this is ridiculous. Yeah. But it was just a fad. And the same people who were doing it, now they eat three times a day and a goddess. So these are just fads sometimes. Even that book was like a fad. But the main thing goes on. We have to remember Krishna somehow or another. And Ekadasi is an opportunity to at least minimize our sense gratification and maximize our Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, we used to have big feasts on Ekadasi, because the devotees were so anxious that it was Ekadasi that they had a fast. So in order to pacify the devotees, they used to have big feasts. But then it switched also. Then Prabhupada said, I remember hearing in one lecture, you should observe every appearance day. And if you look at the Vaishnava calendar, there are so many appearance days. But because we were a fanatic at that time, and I was a temple president where I was in Houston, therefore every appearance day we observed a half day fast. So every other day we were fasting. And I told all the devotees to, they had to observe full fast on Ekadasi. So devotees, we became frazzled, and gradually we started to lose our devotees. One by one they disappeared. So then besides that, every day, we were quite young person, devotees, and young. Therefore, the idea of fasting every other day was less than appealing. Yeah, I think, oh, today's a breakfast. Thank Krishna. Therefore, these things have to be judged according to time and place. But not that everyone should, you know, equally fast in the same way. observe the same type of austerity. But the general purpose of austerity is to increase our remembrance of Krishna, not to decrease it. So I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Nectar of Instruction, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.